Hello, and welcome to the Rooted in Reliability podcast, your plant performance podcast, where we dive deeper into asset management techniques and know-how. I'm your host, James Kovacevic, and I will be your guide to achieving industry best practice. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is here to provide you with the insights to improve plant performance and deliver bottom-line results to your organization. In case you missed the last episode, you can find the Rooted in Reliability podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and on the reliability.fm network. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. Now let's dive into today's topic. It is my pleasure to welcome back Susan Lavelle. Welcome back, Susan.
Thank you, James. Pleasure to be here.
Well, Susan, I know we had some great feedback and great responses on the previous podcast that we did on root cause analysis made simple. So I figured we'd bring you back and hopefully give our audience another very informative session. So for those that missed that episode, I highly encourage you to go listen to it. It's root cause analysis made simple. But for those that aren't familiar with you specifically, you're a senior consultant with STEP. You're also the president of PMAC, and you've been involved in maintenance, reliability, and asset management for quite a while. What other big pieces am I missing from your background?
I think those are the major areas where I'm focused right now. So I've got about 25 years of experience working in the operating producing companies, and the last 15 or so has been very heavily focused in asset management, reliability, and maintenance.
You're the co-author of Root Cause Analysis Made Simple as well, and that was a fantastic book. So what I wanted to talk about today is not root cause analysis, though. What I wanted to talk to you today about was a bit around asset criticality, because it's a vital and an important piece of any reliability program. So within maintenance and reliability, we need to balance cost, risk, and performance. What tool allows an organization to determine where they need to focus? Is that asset criticality? And if so, why is it?
Great question, James. I think as we discussed with root cause analysis, one of the things we need to realize as maintenance, reliability, and asset management professionals, we have many tools in our toolboxes. Root cause analysis is one of them, and asset criticality is one that is also very frequently used to focus our attention on our key assets when we're setting up our maintenance programs, our maintenance strategies, and trying to decide the prioritization of our planning and scheduling.
What is asset criticality to begin with? Is it just a term we use? We decide this asset over here is important, this one over here is important, or is there some sort of methodology? And what does it actually tell us, asset criticality?
So asset criticality is really a structured methodology that lets us take a very systematic approach to identifying the importance of our assets or our major pieces of equipment to meeting our organization's goals and objectives. We ask ourselves, what are the consequences if an asset fails to perform as expected? So it really supports the execution of our maintenance reliability activities with line of sight back to the company's goals and objectives right through to the front line. So once we know our asset criticality, then we can apply the appropriate rigor for developing the specific set of asset and equipment maintenance strategies, guidance on how fast to react to schedule our corrective work orders for these assets, and even things like how many spare parts to put in our warehouse.
So it's an integrated piece that impacts everything we do as maintenance reliability professionals.
Yeah, it's quite a foundational part to our work as M&R professionals. So you ask sort of how do we go about doing this or determining the asset criticality. At a really high level, what we do is we set our evaluation criteria, then we identify our systems and the specific assets within these systems. Typically, we do this by using the information our CMMS asset hierarchy. We prioritize those systems against those criteria. And then for all the high and extreme criticality systems, we go in and we prioritize the assets and pieces of equipment within each system. It really allows us to establish which pieces of equipment or assets, when they fail, pose the most serious potential consequences or impacts on health and safety, environment, production quality, throughput volumes, or lost production impact, operating repair costs, customer service, things like that, if they fail to deliver.
So it's very important to organizations to get this right from the beginning.
Absolutely.
So how does an organization determine that asset criticality?
One of the things we need to do is to remember that our criteria are generally represented in a grid format, sometimes called the heat map. So if you can picture sort of one of those charts that's got the green, yellow, and red squares on it, that's really what we're trying to create at the foundation. So what we often do is we start with a corporate level hazard identification and risk assessment, or a HIRA matrix is a good start. This tends to give us guidance on our organization's accepted levels for health, safety, and environment categories, and some guidance towards the production and financial impact categories. I usually find that we need to adapt those financial categories off the HIRA to fit our operating locations. So at a large corporate level, a medium category of $5 million annual production impact might be okay, but it would be absolutely devastating at a local branch level. So what we need to do is consider writing the production loss or operating cost impacts on our matrix in terms of percent of the daily production or monthly operating cost budget. Be sure to involve those relevant stakeholders when you're getting this asset criticality heat map set up. This would typically involve someone from health, safety, and environment, perhaps your process safety management team, environment, finance. I've even involved the risk and insurance group before. This is in addition to the maintenance operations and plant engineering staff that would naturally participate in this.
I'm glad you brought that up, because it is not just a maintenance activity. It has to encompass all different aspects of the business. Oftentimes, I see organizations just do this within the maintenance group, and that doesn't really make it effective.
Not at all. It really does need to recognize that this is foundational for understanding what equipment you have, where it is, and what is the value that it brings back to your organization. And you're going to drive a lot of your decisions based on that value. And that value is represented by this asset criticality number.
Now, you touched on it briefly with using the corporate level guidelines, cascading some of those down to the site level. But how does one set up the criteria to perform an asset criticality analysis, A, if they don't have that corporate guidance, or B, if they have to make those adaptations?
I think there's sort of no one size fits all. I have to admit that over all of the companies I've ever worked in my career, everyone has had some variant of that corporate risk matrix or guideline. Even the smallest companies have had a variation of it. So one of the things that you can do when you're going out there is look at what are your criteria or your categories across the top, if we want to call it that, on your heat map. And as I said, the most typical ones that I see are health and safety, environment, quality, throughput, customer service, operating costs, production loss impact, those sorts of things. And then what we do going down, if you think of this as almost like an Excel grid, those are your columns. Your rows, typically there's four or five categories. I've seen up to six. And they are sort of the granularity splits within those. If you go and you're talking to all these individuals in health and safety and the environment and your risk and insurance and your other groups here, most of them have industry best practices or guidelines that they're following already. And you may have to piece it together from each of the groups, but I can almost guarantee that there is some variant of this heat map that already exists, even if it's not all put together into one clean chart for you.
I know some organizations use the ISO standard on risk management to develop some of this and manage some of this, but there's a wide variety of different aspects you want to look at as well. So,
absolutely. And this is part of what I'm talking about in terms of adaptation. You generally start with one. There's some excellent industry resources out there, and then you can adapt it to your local level. I've also used the ISO criteria for standardization, typically for setting up our asset hierarchy that we're going to be doing our asset criticality analysis off of. We might look at ISO 14224 and start looking at a level 5 or 6 off of it, or variants of that. We also use the ISO risk matrices. And I hate to say it, but if you Google, there are way too many of these criteria that are out there. This concept isn't new, and so you're going to find a fair number of references out there by very reputable people that are available online.
With having all these criteria, all these guidelines available, all these resources available, is there a one-size-that-fits-all approach for, say, an organization? Or do we have to do that adaptation at the lower levels?
I don't think there's necessarily a one-size-fits-all, but there's certainly a typical structured approach that most organizations follow. And as I said, the variation tends to be in the asset criticality heat map more than the approach. This is part of the reason that I've typically taken the high-level heat map and I've adapted it down. So it is, your criteria could be 100% of the daily production for this area, followed by, say, 75%, 50%, 25%, or 10% of the local production level could be my granularity within my throughput column. And certainly, if you're a very large corporation, there's a wide range of what that actually translates into, whether it's liters of soda pop, barrels of oil, or tons of ore being processed. All of those are variants of it. So we need to put that together. We may also want to look at percent of our operating and maintenance budget for the month or something like that to understand the true financial impact of the repair costs.
Now, the one question I do get is, do you want to include the ability to detect that looming issue? Do we want to include detectability in the risk or the asset criticality criteria?
I generally tend not to at the first run through, because what I use my criticality for then is determining what the consequences of the failure are. And it helps guide me on how much rigor I want to put into development of my maintenance and asset strategy. So if I have a highly critical piece of equipment, I may choose to perform a full-on RCM analysis on that piece of equipment, or go with the extra cost of installing online continuous 24/7 365 vibration analysis on a large piece of rotating equipment. On the other hand, if my asset criticality is low or minimal impact or even no impact, there is not necessarily the same financial cost or business drivers back to our cost risk and performance balance to install all of that in that particular asset, which is a much lower criticality. So I tend to do the asset criticality without it and use that as guidance for when I'm deciding to put the extra expense of installing the online condition monitoring or something like that.
That's very good feedback and information and a way to manage that, because I've seen organizations try to include detectability in their asset criticality and it can skew the results, I find, because now we can reduce that very easily and we'll just put all this other, we'll throw money at the problem essentially with using some of those online condition monitoring tools, and it kind of skews the purpose of it, I found.
Yeah, and we need to also understand that things like the asset criticality number, not only does it drive what rigor we're going to put into our maintenance and reliability program, it also drives things like our schedulers. So if our scheduler gets a high priority corrective work order in, and it's against a high priority asset versus a low priority asset, where is that scheduler going to send his or her crew out to go address that problem? How quickly is it going to be reacted to? Is that considered a break-in work, or is it something that could be scheduled for next week? The other thing we tend to do with our asset criticality is it helps us drive our spare parts stocking. So we'll understand for a high criticality piece of equipment, we may want to have an entire assembly for that pump sitting in our warehouse so we can drop and go and keep the production going. Whereas for something that's a lower criticality piece of equipment, perhaps we have a little bit more flexibility on storing the spare parts at the nearby town as opposed to directly on site. I'm thinking of remote locations here. Or maybe we can afford to have a little bit more of a stock out level and not have so much of our capital dollars tied up in inventory. If it's a lower criticality piece of equipment, we certainly need to know what spare parts are, but we may not have to have them all on site and immediately available.
Yeah, that's a good point. By having that criticality ranked appropriately, you can manage your spare parts more effectively. It's definitely a key piece in the equation of spare parts management.
For sure. And there's lots of dollars tied up in that.
Yes, way too much often, I find. You mentioned knowing the criticality of the equipment. So oftentimes I hear organizations say, we're going to do the criticality at a system level, at a process level. What is the right level to do the asset criticality at?
I think actually starting at the system level makes sense. So if you start at the system level, what you end up doing is you can move through the criticality analysis a little bit faster. So if we start off at the top level and we set up our systems, then what we understand is that for the low criticality systems, no piece of equipment or individual piece of equipment in that system will have a higher priority than the overall system level. And if we know that the impact of the failure of that system is quite low, we don't need to analyze every single piece of equipment or sub-asset within that system. On the other hand, any system that's designated as, depending on your company, extreme or very high or high and even medium sometimes, we do want to dive down into the specific assets within that system to understand, is it a particular asset that we need to focus on? Sometimes we will discover things like if we're looking at our flare system, perhaps, or our pressure relief system, it will be certain pieces of equipment within that system that are very critical in terms of ensuring that we've got the stability and we've got the responsiveness of our equipment to the consequences of a failure. On the other hand, not every single small asset or small piece of instrumentation within that system has the same level of criticality, and we need to provide that differentiation. As I said, it really drives a lot of our asset strategies, our planning, our scheduling, and even our spare parts. So what I would typically suggest is that we look at the high-level system, and then once we've got the system understanding, we go below that and we dive into the more critical systems and look at the specific assets within those.
This podcast is brought to you by Iridicio. Be sure to check out iridicio.com for a free copy of their ebook, A Smarter Way of Preventative Maintenance. This ebook will allow you to review your current maintenance program and eliminate the non-value-added work you're doing, which is most likely causing you more downtime than it is preventing. www.iridicio.com. That's a very good approach. It prevents wasted resources on analyzing every single piece of equipment in that situation.
For sure. It helps us move forward and make progress quickly too, but with a lot of technical appropriate sound judgment and information to look at it at a system level.
So once an organization has done all this work, so they've started at the system level, they've ran through, evaluated each system and those high-risk systems, each piece of equipment or assets against that criteria and determined what that asset criticality number is, what do they actually do with it? Does it sit in a document on the shelf? Does it go in the CMMS? What do they actually do with that next?
That's a really good question. Yeah, we don't want it all just sitting on the shelf. Typically, what you do is you put that information back into your CMMS. Most commonly, we see category rankings of 0 to 5 or 1 to 5. You'll have to determine and be very careful whether 5 is the most critical or 1 is the most critical, because different companies have made different decisions on that. That should really go into your CMMS. What's going to happen with that is if a corrective work order comes in, our schedulers are going to look at it and say, oh, I've got a high priority work order on a high priority asset or a high criticality asset. I better get somebody looking at that one right away, versus I've got a low priority work order on a low priority or low criticality asset. Maybe we can wait a week or two for that one. I think that one of the key things that we need to think about here is that often the people who are working with the equipment, we have a pretty good idea of what our major production assets are, which ones are critical and which ones aren't. But we're often surprised by assets that have a far bigger impact than we expected. So a $500 controller or valve, when it fails to operate as expected, could take down the entire plant. Perhaps we're impacting the chlorine in a water treatment plant or something like that. And we also need to think about the results that will be used and the PM program that's going to be driven off of it. Great example is a fire hydrant. It's typically designated as a safety critical piece of equipment. This means it's really vitally important for us to test the functionality of the fire hydrant for the water flow rate, the pressure, all of those sorts of things on a regular basis. However, we had a nasty rain and snowstorm here earlier this week, and standing out there painting it for corrosion protection and visibility in the middle of the rainstorm versus waiting for sun later this week may be a more prudent approach. I'm not talking about years delay here, but a few days is okay on the paint. But certainly we need people to check that water flow rate and pressure. And those are some of the guidance that comes from setting up our asset criticality appropriately within our CMMS system. That helps everybody down the line to do their job better.
Absolutely. And when you mentioned the 1 to 5 thing and which one is the high criticality versus low criticality, it's funny because, like you said, all different organizations do it differently. Personally, I like to put the highest criticality as 5. And then that way, when you set up your work orders or your work order priorities, you categorize as 1 to 5 or whatever the case is. So you can times them together to get what the ranking index is. I like that approach, but I know some organizations like to put 1 as the highest criticality asset.
I've been in so many different organizations with different choices. I just learned to ask very quickly at the beginning, am I aiming for a high number or a low number here? I also like it often if we can have some sort of, I don't know what to call it, like toggle switch or button inside the CMMS that allows me to categorize some of the pieces of equipment. So if it's been designated as safety critical, that I can actually flag it as a safety critical piece of equipment, or that this particular one is a regulatory obligation or things like that. So when I am trying to do my scheduling, I take my asset criticality and I know what the main driver is behind that criticality as well for my scheduling.
Yeah, that's very good. Being able to identify those regulatory requirements, very important. I was working with an organization trying to set up their integrity management system. So they didn't have a system in place to check their press relief valves, to check tank integrity, stuff of that nature. So what we wanted to do is set up in the CMMS and just flag all those ones that apply to this program. Unfortunately, it wasn't as easy as just saying that. A lot of back-end work required to get that ability just to check a box saying this is regulatory or safety critical. Very difficult to do if you've after the CMMS is in and it's implemented on a global basis.
And I think that when we're doing the asset criticality, we're actually talking about those regulations, the safety criticality, the production loss impact, and the potential repair costs. And we're looking at either the system level or the equipment level. We're already talking about it. We're already making the decisions. This is the time to capture that information and then feed it into our CMMS, because we know that this asset criticality work is so foundational to all of our other maintenance decisions.
We've gone through this. We've set it up. It's in the CMMS. We're using it on a regular basis like we should be. How often should we go back and review the asset criticality?
You know, I think that typically we go back on a periodic basis, so every couple of years. But I think the thing to keep in mind is we need to know how stable our operation is, and we need to consider this as part of our MOC or management of change process. So if we're making a change to the design, or we're not doing a replace in kind, we're actually putting in new equipment, or we're changing the operating conditions and the set points and things like that, we may want to go back and take a look at the criticality of that particular system that we're affecting by our MOC process. Even better, if we could set up the initial asset criticality at the design review stage or the HAZOP phases and then confirm our analysis once the plant starts up, that would be utopia. But it's not reality most of the time. So I think that we should set up to go through our plants every couple of years. So it's not onerous, it's not taking too long, but that the very specific areas of the plant where we're putting in MOC, we should definitely take a quick peek at our asset criticality and make sure that nothing has changed when we make those plant changes.
Very good advice, including on the MOC is vitally important. Oftentimes I see that skipped and we're maintaining assets still thinking they're extremely high criticality, but in reality, based on all the changes, now they're very low, or vice versa. So we're not managing that cost, risk, performance properly if we don't regularly update these things, in my opinion.
For sure. I see the same thing.
So do you have any other thoughts on asset criticality that we didn't cover that you want to share with the listeners?
I think one of the things is that I really see asset criticality as foundational for so many aspects of our other work as asset management, reliability, and maintenance professionals that it's worth performing. And a lot of people say, oh, I just know what's important. And we usually have a pretty good sense of some of the big equipment or the least important, but we're not very good at guesstimating the criticality. I think it's actually worth doing the asset criticality and not sloughing it off just because it's so foundational to everything else.
Very good words of wisdom there. Now, do you have any tips you want to share with our listeners who have to deal with the asset criticality, such as developing the criteria or actually performing it?
I think in terms of the development of the criteria, I think it's really important to get this established right at the beginning. So it avoids a lot of rework. If you can get your health, safety, and environment, process safety, risk, insurance, the plant engineers, operations and maintenance, even finance together to set those criteria and to all agree to the approach at the beginning, then even when your implementation of it is done by your operations, maintenance, and plant engineering staff, everybody will know what's coming and they'll believe in the end result. So I think it's important to have that collaborative effort up front, get those criteria established, and then to move into the analysis piece.
I cannot emphasize enough the importance of having that cross-functional group to develop that criteria. If you don't include health, safety in developing that, then you don't have their buy-in in the program. So when you're going to prioritize other work over theirs, you don't have that supporter buy-in behind it.
For sure. And I think that that is absolutely vitally important to get all those groups. And I also think that it's not only important for the overall, but I think also on those granular splits for each of the categories. Because if you don't have the commitment to each of those splits, you're going to end up with a lot of rework because you won't be sure that everything was evaluated on the same basis when you go to do the results or the comparison planning between different types of equipment.
Now, what is the one thing you see commonly done incorrectly with asset criticality that you want our listeners to keep an eye out for?
I really think that the big part of it is that they don't go into it with a common agreement on what that heat map granularity looks like, and that you cause a lot of rework by leaping through this or just gut feel on knowing it. So one group may evaluate, as you brought up, all of the pressure relief devices, and they have one set of criteria. And if we evaluate our critical valves or our production assets on different criteria, we have no way of comparing the nuances between them when we're trying to set up our planning, scheduling, and our equipment strategy development.
Yes, don't group those pieces of equipment into that predetermined bucket ahead of time. You need to have that granularity. It's vitally important to, like you said, spare parts management, work planning, the equipment strategy you're going to use. Get that level of granularity that's needed.
Absolutely. And even drives into things like our redundancy and whether we have installed hot spares and things like that.
All those come with a cost, so let's make sure we're spending the money where it's needed most.
Now, for sure.
If you had a magic wand, what would be the one thing you would change regarding asset criticality and the way it's implemented or used?
I think that people get scared off thinking it's going to be this monstrous exercise to go through and evaluate the criticality of the equipment. It does take time, but I really think I found when we get that criteria established up front and all of the groups agree on the approach, it's actually fairly easy to perform. And then it provides so many benefits that it's well worth taking the time to zip through and actually perform the analysis and not just go on our gut feel.
Very good words of wisdom. Now, what is the one action you want our listeners to take away from this conversation?
You know, I'm going to sound a bit like a broken record here, but get that criteria sorted out with all the relevant stakeholders at the beginning. And then once you've got that sorted out, make sure that you have the right experienced staff in the room to participate in the analysis. Typically, your analysis is done by a combination of operations, maintenance, and your plant engineering staff, but make sure you've got that criteria and the approach sorted out. Can't emphasize that enough.
No, it's a very good action for our listeners to go do is to go establish that criteria with that cross-functional group today. Well, Susan, I appreciate you taking the time out on a Saturday morning to come do this conversation with us. But where can people find out more about you? What events, activities are you going to be at in the near future?
As you introduced me, I'm a consultant with Step Consulting Incorporated. I'm based out of Calgary, and I'm also currently the president of PMAC, so the Plant Engineering Maintenance Association of Canada. I'll be speaking at Maintrain 2017, which is our annual conference. It'll be in September in Saskatoon. Hope that some of your listeners choose to join in. If they'd like more information on PMAC, please check out the website, www.pmac.org. We have a whole slew of webinars, group chapter meetings in your local area. We've got our annual convention. We've got a great body of knowledge. So if people would like to contact me, that's probably one of the easiest ways to get a hold of me.
Excellent. And I actually will be speaking at Maintrain 2017 as well. So it'll be good to meet up with you.
Absolutely. I saw your name there on the program and the agenda. It looks like a fantastic lineup of speakers this year and so many valuable case studies. And then this year as well, the Global Forum on Maintenance and Asset Management is holding their meetings in conjunction with Maintrain. So we'll have the opportunity to hear from asset management, maintenance, and reliability leaders in their field from across the world.
I'm looking forward to it. It should be a great, great conference to attend. Now, do you have any resources you want to share with our listeners regarding asset criticality?
I think that some of the basic resources that I tend to use are, as we talked about, ISO 14224 is good. The ISO's got a standard on risk assessment. There's a lot of publicly available resources out there. One of the more typical ones that companies have relied on, Ivara put out sort of a guideline around this, and Ricky Smith did a number of years ago, like back into the 80s. Tacoma Zach at Uberlytics has got some guidelines on it. Those are the big names that come to mind, but those are certainly not exclusive. I've seen some excellent work out of the military that's also freely available to anyone who wants to Google it. So not going to sell anyone else's products here, but those are the typical resources that we look to when we're looking for industry best practices.
No, they're all very good resources, and I appreciate you calling those out. It's much appreciated. I'm sure our listeners will probably be Googling some of these, but we'll be sure to include all the events you mentioned, PMAC, Maintrain, Step Consulting, your profile on LinkedIn, as well as links to some of these resources in the show notes for our listeners to make it easy for them.
Excellent. Thanks very much, James.
All right. Now, well, Susan, I'll let you get back to your Saturday morning. I appreciate the time. I learned some more stuff about asset criticality. I'm sure our listeners did as well. So thank you and have a great morning.
You're welcome. Thank you too. Bye.
I would like to thank you for listening and remind you that you can always find out more on maintenance, reliability, and asset management at www.iridicio.com and by following our blog. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is a proud member of the Reliability.fm network. I'd like to ask you to please rate and review this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. It ensures the podcast stays relevant and is easy to find by like-minded professionals. It is only with your ratings and reviews that the Rooted in Reliability podcast can continue to grow. I thank you for providing this small but critical support. We'll see you next week when we dive into another burning topic with Rooted in Reliability, your plant performance podcast.